from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
The last time we discussed homelessness here on In Conversation was July of 2019. In Louisville, officials had just approved a special appropriation of more than $500,000 to create low-barrier shelters and other services for the city's large homeless population, and they commissioned a study on homelessness. I'm Rick Howlett. Obviously, a lot has happened in the last year and a half, including a pandemic, and today we'll talk about homelessness in our region and beyond amid COVID-19. Our guest will include some advocates for the homeless, and we'll discuss how the economic downturn has left many people facing eviction. The government has stepped in with emergency help, but isn't enough. We want to hear from you, too. Call us with your comments and questions as we discuss homelessness this hour on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Good to have you with us today. This hour, we're going to talk about homelessness, what it means to be homeless, and of course, how the coronavirus pandemic has affected those who were already homeless and caused others to become newly homeless. We have a full slate of guests to discuss this and answer your questions, listen to your comments, and offer help if you or someone you know needs it. Welcome to our first segment guest, Natalie Harris, Executive Director of the Coalition for the Homeless based in Louisville. The coalition is made up of more than 30 member agencies that work collectively to serve the homeless in the area. Natalie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Cassandra Miller is with us. She is Program Manager with the Office of Resilience and Community Services in Louisville Metro Government, and she is here to talk about evictions and eviction relief programs that have been created amid the pandemic and the resulting economic downturn. Cassandra, welcome to In Conversation. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I'm excited to be here.
Good to have you. Natalie and Cassandra will be with us for the first segment, and later we'll be joined by two others who oversee agencies that serve the homeless, Nina Mosley from the Wayside Christian Mission in Louisville, and Reverend Jim Moon III, president of Catalyst Rescue Mission in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Also, later, we'll be joined by a researcher, Dr. Robin Moon, no relation to Reverend Jim Moon. She's a professor from the City University of New York who's going to give us a broader perspective on the issue. And, of course, we want to hear from you, too. Call us 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. What's going on in your community with homelessness? What steps do you think should be taken to help those who don't have a permanent home or living on the streets and perhaps in this cold February and with a COVID public health emergency continuing? Are you facing or have you faced homelessness? We're talking a lot these days about eviction, which has become a very real thing for thousands of people in the midst of COVID. What's been your experience with eviction? Call us 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. We're on Twitter. WFPL News is our handle if you want to send us a message that way. And you can also reach us through Facebook. Natalie, let me start with you because we had a major weather event this week, an ice storm, cold temperatures, sub-freezing temperatures. How's the response to that been going this week?
It has been very good. And I have to start this whole conversation with a shout out to the homeless shelters in our city. So people know, shelters have remained open both day and night, shelters across the city. They did have to do some moving beds apart and, learning, as we all learned, all of the protection items that they needed to have on hand. But they have remained open, and that has meant that when they had to send volunteers home just for safety reasons, and split apart so that all the staff were not there at the same time. Those staff have been working crazy extra hours. They just need a shout out as we're thanking those frontline people who have kept us all safe. Be sure to thank anyone you know who works at a shelter. Meanwhile, the Salvation Army opened an additional shelter. They opened up their gymnasium, and it has been open since the beginning of COVID, which means that people were, I don't know that everyone knows this, so if you do know of a homeless person and they need a place to go 24 hours a day, they can go there to Salvation Army on Brook Street, and they do have that safe place to stay. And on top of that, we've been trying to work to make sure that there is testing and protection for people in the both inside and outside in the shelter system. And we were really proud to see that there were actually no cases amongst the homeless service agencies of COVID until the holidays came and the community spread was so wide that we then started to see it in the shelters. So we've been dealing with that, notifying shelters when somebody is positive so that we can isolate that person and keep everybody else safe. And that's become pretty much common practice now in the shelter system as well.
Last time we had you on the show was July of 2019. Obviously, a lot has changed since then. What are you looking at in terms of homeless numbers in the Louisville area, the area you serve? I know you just recently held another census, so you're probably still tabulating that figure. But what generally are you looking at in terms of how many people are homeless in this area?
Yeah, so we are still working on those numbers, and it'll be interesting this year because we didn't really have the same kind of street count we normally do. We went out all week to find people instead of just one night as we have in the past. But when we look at the annual numbers, it does look like we had an increase of homelessness, especially outdoor homelessness in our city in 2019. But that has, from what we can see, remained stable since then. Anybody who comes downtown and, travels around our city will see that homelessness is more visible at this point. And that just has to do with the fact that a lot of the places that people would normally go, people know that our downtown library is a place that a lot of homeless people go, a lot of fast food restaurants that are doing only drive-through, those kinds of places are closed. And so you do see a lot more homeless people who would be indoor somewhere out on our street this year or in 2020 than you would have before that.
Let me turn to you, Cassandra Miller, because we just have you for the first segment, and you are the Louisville Metro Government point person on eviction relief. First of all, can you give us an idea of the impact that the economic downturn caused by COVID-19 has had on the eviction rate in the area you serve?
Yeah, so thank you. So let me address that in two ways. First, I'll just talk about what we did through phase one of our eviction program, and then what we're looking at as far as phase two. So some of the studies that are out indicate that on an average, there's somewhere between 14 and 16 people evicted each day in Jefferson County. That's way too many. That is 14 too many. And we want to help alleviate a lot of that. And so what happened in our first phase, which ended in December, we assisted right at 6,000 households or 17,000 residents with eviction prevention assistance. That program really focused on getting people caught up with rental arrears and getting them current at least through the end of December. We spent roughly $20 million to do that, and so we was able to make significant impact. With this next phase of funding, again, we're still looking at trying to reduce those numbers of evictions per day. We're looking at a similar rollout with the exception of we're focused not only just on rental arrears, but understanding and appreciating the fact that people are struggling with paying their rent going forward. And so this next phase of programming will do just that. It will pay rental arrears, and it will be able to help people going forward. This program is scheduled for announcement today. The mayor at 2:00 will be doing a press conference, and he will be talking about all of the specifics around just, kind of who's eligible, some target groups that we're looking at, how people need to apply. So this is really just breaking today. We do expect to get started with actually seeing people, processing applications, and all of that beginning on Monday, the 15th of February. So we're excited, and this gives us a real opportunity to put a dent in those numbers of families being evicted. And while we have a significant amount of money, we understand that this is really not enough to meet the need and the ongoing need that our community faces. Yet it is our way to get started. And this is a program that is not only just for Jefferson County. So I don't know if you have listeners from all across the state.
We do.
Great. So all across the state, there will be this eviction assistance funding available all across the state. The governor mentioned it yesterday. And then we're rolling out our program with the mayor's announcement today at 2 o'clock.
And I guess you're hoping for another round of help. I think President Biden has mentioned that he went in this relief package that he's proposing that there will be additional help in that.
That is our hope. And we know that significantly positively impacts families' ability to get caught up on things. And while there's resources in the community for utility assistance, whether it's for Louisville Gas and Electric, LG&E, or Louisville Water, there's, rental assistance. So we know that there's a nice infusion of assistance in the community, but having those extra resources in your pocket really does a family good. And so that is our hope, that there is additional stimulus relief coming from the federal government for families.
When you give assistance for people who are facing eviction, are you getting pretty good buy-in from landlords? Because I assume some landlords charge late fees and penalties and that sort of thing if you're behind on your rent.
We've had a really good response from landlords. A lot of landlords, they too were burdened because rents were not being paid to them. And so they really appreciated this round of assistance. Now, moving forward, there's additional protections, particularly for the tenants. Some of the things that we're going to be looking at for landlords is we're going to be asking them to waive some of these late fees. If people can't pay their rent, obviously they can't pay all of these additional late fees. And there's really no cap on how late fees, the amount of late fees. Some, landlords charge late fees by the day, some charge it by the month, all of that sort of stuff. And so what we're going to be asking for this next phase of eviction is for landlords to waive those fees. So if you want to participate in this program and allow your tenants to benefit from, us paying either rental arrears and or being able to pay rent moving forward, we're going to ask you to do that. So landlords, they have been very receptive to our program.
We're just about out of time. We're up against a break. Cassandra Miller, where can people go if they need assistance from Louisville Metro Government from your office?
Okay. It's just it's the Metro Louisville website, louisvilleky.gov/neighborhoodplace. And there will be all of the information as well as documentation that people will need in order to qualify for assistance. It's all right there, neatly packaged and very easily to do. And the mayor is going to be announcing today at 2 o'clock on how people need to apply.
And as you mentioned, Governor Beshear announced a new round of assistance for those of you out in the other parts of the state at a press conference yesterday, so that you can get more information from the state on that. Cassandra, thank you so much for joining us. Natalie Harris will stay with us. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Nina Mosley from the Wayside Christian Mission and Reverend Jim Moon from Catalyst Rescue Mission in Jeffersonville, Indiana. We'll be back with more in a moment. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, and today we're talking about homelessness in our area, our region, and beyond. And our guests for this segment are Natalie Harris, Executive Director of the Coalition for the Homeless based in Louisville. And welcome to Nina Mosley, Chief Operating Officer for Wayside Christian Mission here in Louisville. Nina, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Reverend Jim Moon is with us. Reverend Moon is President of Catalyst Rescue Mission in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Reverend Moon, welcome to In Conversation.
I was like, I don't hear any voices anymore.
Thank you for joining us. Again, we welcome your input, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. We're on Twitter, WFPL News is our handle, and we're also on Facebook. Natalie, let me come back to you for a moment, because you touched on it in the first segment. Can you give us a little bit more of a picture on how the agencies that you work with and the coalition have adapted to the COVID-19 pandemic? Here we are almost a year in.
Yes. Very early on, we started in cooperation with the city, holding weekly calls. And there are weekly calls with both shelters and outreach groups to keep informed about each step of the way. We've had to deal with trying to get testing into the shelters, trying to get PPE into the shelters. There have been two allocations of federal money that have come down to help shelters and create additional programming for the homeless that were allocated out to shelters. And one of the things that we hope is that some of the things that have come about because of COVID can continue. One example is the facility at Salvation Army. They are now talking about keeping that facility open all year round instead of only during really cold or really hot days, which would be a new asset to our community even after COVID. So people seem to be adapting well, but they're really tired. And I just wanted to hit on something that Cassandra said about the funding that is newly available. That, you know, at this point, we as advocates are working to get that program changed some to make it easier to use. But we know there are already 2,000 people who are on a waiting list through the community ministries and Louisville Forward to get assistance that have been waiting since mid-December. And so a lot of those landlords and tenants are really bothered by the fact that they've been waiting so long. And so we need the rules to change on that funding so we can get it out as fast as possible before people get evicted. So we still have a lot of advocacy work to do to make sure people can get cannot become homeless, because while I said we haven't seen a great increase in homelessness during COVID, we will if we cannot get this money out to as many as people as possible before eviction.
Nina, the Wayside Christian Mission has been around for decades. Of course, this is your first time dealing with something like the COVID-19 pandemic. How have you adapted? How has your staff adapted to it?
Well, it's been a challenge, but we've done the best we can. Of course, we have to social distance folks as much as possible. That has, for one thing, added additional seatings to every meal just to get folks through the meal times, because they have to spread out so much in the dining rooms. We've had to social distance in the shelters. We've had to enforce everyone wearing masks. And a lot of times that's a challenge in and of itself. Folks just don't want to wear those masks, and we've had to do that. So we did pretty well up until December, and then we did have an outbreak of COVID in the shelter. But we've worked through that, and things are back to where, you know, it's just two or three at a time now that have it. So it's been very different. And one of the things that we have missed the most is we have not been able to allow our volunteers to come in. Wayside has been around for 63 years, and we've always been a heavily volunteer-friendly operation and dependent on those volunteers to do a lot of the things that we would normally have to hire staff for. So that has been rough as well.
You're listening to In Conversation on WFPL. We are talking about homelessness across our region. Later on, we're going to be joined by a researcher from the City University of New York to talk about, give us a broader picture of homelessness across the country. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. We welcome your input, your questions and comments. You can also reach us through Twitter. WFPL News is our handle. And you can also reach us through Facebook as well. We're talking right now with Natalie Harris, the executive director of the Coalition for the Homeless, and Anita Mosley, chief operating officer for Wayside Christian Mission. I think we're trying to get Reverend Jim Moon from Jeffersonville, Indiana, from the Catalyst Rescue Mission to join us as well. 502-814-TALK again is our number, 502-814-8255. And I understood Reverend Moon is with us. Are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Rick.
And we this is our first discussion with you. Tell us a little bit about the Catalyst Rescue Mission across the river from Louisville and Jeffersonville, Indiana, and how you've been adapting to the COVID pandemic.
Well, we recently purchased the shelter from the Haven House, Inc. in 2019. It was actually November of 2019. So we have been working with the homeless for quite some time. We have put some new programming in, some new right in time for COVID to hit. So it basically changed everything that we had plans to do. So we had to basically create a pathway for people to come into the shelter after they've been tested. We don't allow people to enter the shelter until after they have been tested for COVID. So we received a grant from the Division of Mental Health and Addiction from the FSSA that helps us to actually get people tested and house them in hotel rooms until we are able to get their test results. And if they need quarantine, we can quarantine them from 10 to 14 days so that they have a safe place in which to quarantine apart from bringing them directly into the shelter. That has kept COVID from the shelter, but like I think what Nina said earlier, we did have an outbreak in the end of November right before Thanksgiving, and we had to really work through our protocols and, you know, the mask wearing and enforcement. So it's changed a lot of the housing availability, because the housing that we normally are used to having is all backlogged due to COVID-19. So people are sitting longer in the actual shelter than they normally would have been. And so we're having to work through them a little at a time. So it's moved the days, maybe 45 to 60 days to maybe 100 days of actually being available in the shelter.
And Reverend Moon,
where
do the homeless and the you serve, your clients, fit in the vaccination hierarchy? And of course, your volunteers and the people who work with them.
Well, since we're a seclusion shelter for the state of Indiana, we're the Southern Seclusion Shelter. So anybody in Region 13 or several other regions can come here to seclude. All of our staff have been vaccinated. In fact, I just received my second dose yesterday of the Moderna vaccine. The homeless population has been told that they are part of 1B, and the congregate living settings are going to be 1B. At first, we were told they were 2A, and so they have not been vaccinated yet, which is a concern because they traffic through a lot of areas, and the encampments on this side of the river, there's at least 8 known encampments that we have on this side of the river that could easily be affected by COVID. And without the outreach groups going out there and touching base with folks, we would never know that they have symptoms or need quarantined or need tested.
And let me pose that question to you, Natalie, and Nina, you can answer as well. Where are the homeless here in Kentucky and in Louisville in terms of the vaccination hierarchy? Natalie, we'll start with you.
It sounds very similar. We had a few straggler shelters that I think are behind Wayside, so Nina can say where Wayside is. But the shelter staff were designated 1A, and so we've been just trying to coordinate the process with the city to get them all vaccinated. We have been told similar things about the actual clients that are in our facilities and people that are on the streets. We are in a lower group. We're not sure if they're 1B or 1C. It sounded like they are here in Kentucky. And I think one of the things that the public health department is looking for is a one-shot vaccine, which will make it easier for them to find people and get them a vaccination once rather than having to find them again for the second.
502-814-TALK is our number if you want to join our conversation about homelessness on In Conversation on WFPL, 502-814-8255. David is on the line from Greensburg, Indiana, and he's looking for some guidance, has experienced homelessness. David, welcome to the program.
Oh, yes. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you, sir?
Oh, not too bad.
Well, tell us as much as you're comfortable with about your situation these days.
Well, here a while back, I was I did a stint in the county jail where I had to do 120 days. And when I was released, I came home and I was forced out of my trailer. So I became homeless at that point. So I've been fighting with trying to find a place to rent, and I'm on a fixed income. I'm disabled, and I'm 62 years old. I'm a senior citizen, and it's very hard for me to find a place to stay.
And you are in Greensburg, Indiana. Where is that in relation to, the southern Indiana?
I'm about an hour away from you, up 65.
Reverend Moon, being in Jeffersonville, is there any advice you can offer, or any resources that you can point?
That's one of the major concerns that we have, is that in Indiana, in southern Indiana, there really literally is not very many homeless shelters. In fact, we're the only homeless shelter that we know of in 14 counties. The nearest one, there's one in Evansville. There's also the ones in Indianapolis that we're speaking of. But there are just not that many resources that will get people on their feet and give them that time to find the facilities that someone like our guests would find adequate housing in. We have a couple options in this community, but in every community they have some lower income options that probably getting in contact with mental health services or through the local hospital, they can actually offer what those options might be. They're in every community, but it's I'm not familiar with Greensburg, so to speak.
David, are you familiar with any resources in your area? Have you tried to reach out to anyone yet?
Well, I've actually there's a transitional living center here in Greensburg, and I stayed there for a while, but they wanted $100 a week to stay there. And it requires you to work, and I'm disabled.
I see. Have you reached out to anyone else?
I have gone through social services, and they don't have anything at this time.
Well, I would, as Reverend Moon said, reach out to some the folks that he mentioned, and. We wish you all the best, and we have your contact information, so keep in touch with you. Maybe we can track down some other resources for you.
Okay, I sure appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, David, and we wish you all the best. We care about you and everyone who's in your situation, and thanks for telling your story.
You have a good day. Thank you.
You too. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. We are talking about homelessness here in the Louisville area, across Kentucky and southern Indiana, and nationally. 502-814-8255 is the number if you want to join our conversation. And again, we are on Twitter and Facebook as well. Our Twitter handle, WFPL News. Let's talk about homeless encampments for a moment. Natalie, back when we did this show back in mid-2019, encampments were being removed. I think there was a notice period that had been approved by local officials. Where do we stand these days on homeless encampments? We haven't heard much about them lately.
Most of the removal of homeless encampments has ceased during COVID, since the beginning of COVID. There have been locations, though, that have been determined by the city to be unsafe. And so those places, they have continued to do the 21-day notice. They have to put the notice there at the site so that people know that it's coming. And then they coordinate with outreach teams from multiple agencies that go out and try to work with people to get them to come into housing options as well as shelter.
I see. And I believe the last time we had you on the program, there was a study underway. There was going to be a study, perhaps involving the University of Louisville, regarding Louisville's homeless situation. What has become of that you're aware of?
That study was conducted, and it is now kind of the blueprint for the greatest needs in our city for street homelessness. And you will see in there that permanent housing with supports for homeless people is a huge priority. A second priority is case management that would be coupled with the housing. And one of the things that Nina may want to talk to is the third one is low barrier shelters. And they were the agency that stepped up when nobody else was willing to make that possible in our city and create a place where people can come and go. You know, with less questions and a lot less rules. And it has been, as far as I know, Nina, pretty much full since the day they opened.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Nina. Those were created back in 2019. There was a big appropriation from Louisville Metro Government, and you, of course, took the lead on that. How's that been going?
Well, we opened our low-barrier shelter on Christmas Eve 2018. It has 100 beds. It's pretty much stays full up until COVID started. We were at a really 105% capacity constantly. When COVID came in, a lot of folks, there's a couple things that happened there. A lot of folks that normally would use a shelter became fearful of coming into the shelters due to COVID. And so those eased the numbers somewhat. And then also due to the eviction moratorium, not as many people were coming into the homeless system. And so the numbers eased a little bit during that time. We're still pretty much full every night. We've learned a lot since we opened the low barrier shelter. The low barrier shelter was designed to reach four subpopulations that normally would not come into the shelter and were camping on the streets. And these were couples who did not have any children, because normally a shelter would divide those folks to the men's shelter and the women's shelter if there's no children involved. People who have pets with them, because most shelters will not accept pets unless they are support animals. People who are intoxicated or under the influence of drugs. Most shelters exclude those from the population. And then people who have been barred from shelters in town, we decided to give those folks a second chance. We learned a lot during that process, and now we have the minimum amount of rules in place to keep everyone safe, but to still allow these folks to come in. It's working pretty well, and the unusual thing is that the low barrier shelter most of the time is about two-thirds women, homeless women, and one-third homeless men, which is kind of upended from the norm in the shelters.
I'm going to have to stop you right there, Nina. We'll come back to this conversation. We're up against a break. We'll talk more about it. We'll be back with more in a moment. We're talking about homelessness on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett, and today we are talking about homelessness here in the Louisville area across Kentucky and southern Indiana and nationwide. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. You can send us a tweet, WFPL News is our handle, and we're also on Facebook. I want to thank Natalie Harris from the Coalition for the Homeless for joining us for the first two segments of the program. We are back with Natalie had to say goodbye, but we still with us are Nina Mosley, who is Chief Operating Officer of the Wayside Christian Mission, and the Reverend Jim Moon, President of Catalyst Rescue Mission in Jeffersonville, Indiana. And joining us is Dr. J. Robin Moon, no relation to Reverend Moon, who is Associate Professor at City University of New York School of Public Health and co-founder and Chief Strategy Officer at Santa Solutions. That's a boutique public health advisory consultancy firm. Dr. Moon, welcome to the program. Are you there, Dr. Moon?
Professor Moon? Okay, we'll try to get Dr. Moon connected there. Let me come back to you, Nina. You were in the middle of a thought about the low-barrier shelter that you've set up. You've had some experience now with it at Wayside, and you were talking about the population before I had to interrupt you, the men versus women population. You want to finish what you were talking about?
Sure. Typically, in most shelters, there's more homeless men than there are women. In the low-barrier shelter, it's about 2-to-1 women over men, and those that we do have tend to be a lot of folks with disabilities or very elderly folks. So it's a completely different picture from a normal shelter population. So it's been good to have that facility and to make sure that these folks that are very vulnerable are off the streets and in a safe place at night.
And for those who don't know, Wayside is not just a place for a bed and a hot meal. You have various other programs as well to help people get back on their feet, right?
Yes, we have a lot of different programs here. We have a large recovery program for men and women dealing with substance abuse issues. We also have a job training program. We have work therapy program. We have permanent supportive housing for both men and for women. And so there's a lot of different things going on. We have case managers in all of our shelters, and they pretty much try to craft a treatment program for each and every person. Whatever it is that brought them into homelessness, we try to help them find their way back to self-sufficient living.
Well, I think we have Dr. Moon now. We do our telephone tap dance here in the midst of COVID because for safety precautions, we don't have anybody in the studio. So let me reintroduce Dr. J. Robin Moon, professor, associate professor at Sydney University of New York School of Public Health and co-founder and chief strategy officer at Santa Solutions. That's a boutique public health advisory consultancy firm. Dr. Moon, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. And I have never been in the same room, even with another moon, much less a radio show. So it just makes it all the more special.
Quite a coincidence today. Two people by the last name of Moon on in conversation. We're going to make a note of that. Well, let me ask you, Dr. Moon, and you've done some national research. What kinds of trends have you seen pre-COVID and mid-COVID in terms of homelessness nationwide?
Sure. Well, pre-COVID, the latest official data we have is from January 2019. So this is way before COVID. And as it's already mentioned here that the homeless census is being counted right now as we speak with a different methodology. And I'm guessing it's going to be much higher. And as you know, the point-in-time count is, you know, always undercounting. So nationwide, as of January 2019, we had 568,000 homeless people. But that's, you know, if New York City example is telling of any other, so New York, you know, it has 60,000 in shelter system at the same time, January 2019, but over the year, we had doubled that number, 123,000 people, unique individuals who've been, you know, in and out of the shelter system. So it's going to be a lot more. It's a very complicated system and numbers, but let me just break it down to three different levels. First is a chronic homeless. People, you know, like the stereotypes, the people, you know, that you we see on shelters and subways and streets. That's about 17% of all of our homeless population. The second tier is the individual, single adults. They are 70% of all of our homeless population in the U.S., and an astounding number, half of them are unsheltered, meaning they are on the streets or, you know, coming in and out of emergency rooms at any given night in the winter and things like that. So these are the people that the number of which shot up very much through COVID in 2020, you know, for which we, you know, had to cooperate, work with hospital systems to provide medical support, not only, you know, precaution measures, but really those who got sick, you know, to take care of them in a safe manner for themselves as well as for the population to prevent spread. And there's a third category that we're talking about now. The trend is definitely going up in New York. Apologies for...
Are you there, Dr. Moon? I think you may have dropped out. Go ahead.
Went up higher than ever, these are the people who, you know, possibly may not have been homeless before, or, you know, like a periodically, episodically homeless as opposed to chronic. And we say that 4 out of 10 Americans are one missed paycheck away from being homeless. So that's a number that we need to keep in mind. And there are about 10 million people in the U.S. Who are either, you know, living under poverty. So they're, you know, we call doubling up. You know, they live with another household, multi-household, you know, situation that, you know, that's also been made very dangerous and unsafe under COVID. Also, people who are severely housing cost burdened. So, you know, they're not, you know, they're 50% or more of their income is paid in the housing. So they are being homeless. Every indicator that we see, again, some of you guys have mentioned unemployment and eviction moratoria expiring, tell us that we're going to experience a lot higher of a number of homelessness.
And Reverend Jim Moon in Jeffersonville, Indiana, a lot of people, when they hear the term or say the term homeless, they have the stereotypical vision of the person who's been living chronically on the streets or in a homeless encampment. But homelessness runs a wide spectrum, doesn't it? As Dr. Moon mentioned, you may be one paycheck or one medical emergency away from not having a place to live, right? Are you there, Reverend Moon? That's for Reverend Moon. I'm sorry. I think we've lost Reverend Moon. Let me pose that question to you, Nina. There is a wide spectrum of homelessness, isn't there?
Oh, yes. It's totally wide. That's why I say we have to craft a specific treatment program for almost every different person. But a lot of folks are disabled. A lot of folks are not able to work. Undereducated, undertrained, elderly folks, a lot of elderly folks in the homeless community. So it is pretty wide.
And a lot of people conflate homelessness and panhandling as well. But, you know, the folks you see off the highway, off ramp or intersection asking for money, some with signs saying they're homeless. But these folks, Nina, may or may not be your clients, right?
Actually, the majority of the folks who are panhandling on the streets and the highways are not homeless. Mm-hmm. Now, they may be in desperate need, but the majority of them are not homeless.
I think we have Jim Moon, Reverend Jim Moon, back from Jeffersonville. Are you there, Reverend?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you for tolerating our telephone tap dance here. Let me ask you about the homeless population in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Is it a sizable population, comparatively speaking, in terms of who your clients and the number of people that you see that you help?
Yeah. So right now at Catalyst Rescue Mission, we have 88 folks in house. There are about 7 at our seclusion shelter right now. Some of the numbers that I've heard, I mean, I've heard people give up to the number of 1,000 people that are chronically homeless on this side of the river. I think the number is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 to 800 folks that are one payment to a hotel motel away from being on the street. They get their checks that come in and out of shelters. So I think we have probably 600 to 800 folks that are, I would say, chronically homeless on this side of the river for whatever reason.
Now, do you do an independent homeless count like the coalition does here in Louisville, or do you do it in conjunction with the folks here? How does that work?
Yes. No, it's independent. Indiana's, we have a point in time count, and that's done every, in fact, they just got it done this past, right in the beginning of February is when they did it over here. I don't know, the numbers have not come back from that yet, but they definitely are independent from Louisville's counts. But with the transient population and the opening of the walking bridge, we see Louisville traffic on this side of the bridge quite a bit, people with Kentucky IDs. We try not to serve folks from Kentucky. That's kind of our general rule of thumb, is if they're from Kentucky, we try to move them back across the bridge to resources, because it's very difficult to get them transferred over to Indiana Medicaid, to their disability on this side of the river, or whatever that may be. The resources that they're accustomed to are across the bridge, so we try to connect them with resources there if we can, unless they are in one of the most vulnerable populations, which we've identified as people over 65 with chronic health conditions, and also children under the age of 6. We'll automatically take those folks.
And that leads me to my next question, because Nina Mosley gave us kind of a population breakdown at Wayside. How does it break down at your facility? Are there more men than women, or how does that shake out?
So our facility, we can hold up to 125 in non-COVID times. But during the COVID situation that we have, our cap is at 95. Right now, as of earlier today, we had 46 men and the rest were women. We had 3 children, so out of the 88 total population here in the building. So we usually have more men than women on a regular basis. That's normal for sheltering. But at this time, it's about even.
Dr. Robin Moon in New York, I wanted to ask you about what are you seeing in terms of how local and state governments and the federal government governments are reacting to the homeless situation across the country, other than providing more money, because I know there's San Francisco has been dealing with a huge homeless population. I was just watching something on television the other night about what they call Skid Row in Los Angeles, this huge area where thousands of people are encamped
in Hollywood.
I just wonder, are there any innovations going on, or what are governments doing besides funding programs?
I want to make 2 points about that. That's a great question. First, I just gave you some national statistics, but you know, there's a high variability among states, especially Medicaid expansion state versus non. There's sheltered homeless and unsheltered population. Also, there's variability. Kentucky, by the way, is one of the better. You guys have been doing really well. You should be proud of that. Also, there's a racial ethnic variability, huge. So, on average, on national average, 17 out of 10,000 is homeless, are homeless. Pacific Islanders, tenfold, 160 out of 10,000. Native Americans, 67 out of 10,000. Black Americans, 55 out of 10,000. So I bring this up to say that it's a structural issue. And structural issue comes, with our historical perspective. So to target this problem that has a structural roots, we must go to the structure, the fundamental causes. So the government, so that's 1 point. And the other is chronic homeless. Immediately, we need better medical supports. And, there's definitely innovations around the country. In the latest article that I wrote on medical respite, so those who are really sick and they can't really afford to go back out to the streets or, anywhere, that is not conducive for full recovery. There have been public-private partnerships between hospital systems and, shelter systems and, local municipalities to bring in the medical providers for these people to, convalesce appropriately. So that's an innovation, and that's a model that's really been challenging to get any attention. And that's one of the, things that I'm thankful that, since 2020, we've actually gotten some attention. Same thing like, telehealth, work from home, none of this was, regulatory-wise possible, but now there's some attention there. And individual permanent supportive housing, which, Medicaid expansion state like Kentucky is doing, and there's a lot more public-private partnership there. It's just because there's a structural root in the problem, it's not just the government's job. And thirdly, for those at-risk population, and we say the single, you know, single determinant for homelessness is affordable housing or rent burden, but it's relative, right? So, you know, housing is not affordable, it's too expensive, but that's also because you're not getting livable wage. You're not making enough money. So, you know, unemployment, criminal justice system, not connecting with the employment, workforce development, all those things need to be looked at. And, you know, finally, government at the national level, the federal government is already looking at it. There, earlier this week, there's an article in New York Times by Harvard researchers called OpportunityInsights.org. It's a project within Harvard School of Economics, economists, looking at how the stimulus money has been spent by low-income population versus medium, not even high, but, you know, medium, not very low-income population. Low-income population, because they don't have enough disposable income, they spent it. They spent that rent. They actually paid rent when they got the stimulus. So that's a really exciting and great indication. It's not just good for those people who need to pay rent. It's also good for the economy because stimulus check is, you know, meant to be spent. Right. So I think that our government is in the right track and it's going to take some time. But I'm hopeful that we are going to do the right thing at the national level.
Got about a minute left in the program. Nina Mosley, I wanted to ask you, you and Reverend Moon both, what do you need right now? Are you hurting for anything in particular because of COVID, because of a lack of resources or a surge in people coming in? Nina, let me start with you. Do you need more volunteers or is there something else? Is there any other immediate need that you have right now?
I always tell people toilet paper. You know, that sounds funny, but we have 500 to 600 people under roof every night, and that's a ton of toilet paper. So,
yeah. What about you, Reverend Moon?
I would echo toilet paper, laundry detergent, individual wrap breakfast items, stuff like that is very easily used on a daily basis. And, yeah, I definitely echo her sentiments on those things.
Well, we are out of time. I want to thank all of you for joining us, Reverend Jim Moon, Dr. J. Robin Moon, Nina Mosley, Natalie Harris, and Cassandra Miller. We all appreciate your work. And thanks to our In Conversation production team, Michelle Tyreen Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, Russell Wells, and Bill Burton. Our theme was composed by Kojin Toshiro. If you miss part of this show or other In Conversation programs, they are available wherever you get your podcast and at WFPL.org. And we also have a new email address for questions, suggestions, and other feedback. It's inconversation@wfpl.org. I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.